this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the July 2010 issue of Ladies' Home Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called Accepting Ethan by Cammie McGovern. My son has autism and he'll never be cured. That's hard to admit, but embracing this fact has made me a better mother. Anyone with an autistic child can tell you something about making lists. In the early days after my son Ethan's diagnosis, I made them compulsively. Words he understands, words he uses, a handful at that point, songs he can sing at least part of. I also had lists about what he hadn't done yet, but would be doing soon. 6 months from now, he will count to 20, following two-step directions, tell a stranger his name. At that time, I believe these lists kept our eyes on the prize. To have Ethan enter kindergarten without an autism diagnosis. I had read enough books about children who undergone intensive therapy and made up 2 years of lost development in 6 months' time to believe it was possible. At night, I summarized my favorite examples for my husband, the nonverbal four-year-old who went from lining up cars to reading Harry Potter, the teenager who left his autism so far behind that he now had a girlfriend and an internet company. We knew it wouldn't be easy, but if a normal life for our son was possible, we thought, how could we not do whatever it takes? But there's another side of our story. Ethan is 13 now and hasn't recovered. My dreams of being able to watch him waltz into kindergarten without his diagnosis are so long ago, frankly, they seem naive. Ethan was diagnosed after his third birthday. Yes, this is autism, one doctor who seemed to be missing a few social skills himself said gruffly. The first thing you need to do is lower your expectations. You should hope he can have a job, write a check, things like that. That a medical professional would talk so blithely lowered the bar of expectations on a toddler enraged me. I researched autism on the internet. I read the Bibles of Hope in the Autism World, Let Me Hear Your Voice, and Sunrise, two books that detail the journey of severely autistic toddlers who recovered completely. They described the extraordinary effect required and made it clear this isn't an undertaking for the faint of heart. These children will go to extremes to resist being drawn out of their shell. They'll turn over tables and try to hurt themselves. They were right. I learned, and every day my heart broke as I watched Ethan resist, sometimes sobbing for hours, much of what we tried to do. In the beginning, I returned to those stories of cured children, often to keep up my determination. I lined up playdates, joined support groups, made flashcards that I used everywhere, the car, the bath, the grocery store, to surround Ethan with language. I played on the floor till my knees were sore to teach him the rudiments of pretend play. Should we make this banana a phone or a car? I asked. I learned to ask a question which choices buried in it so that there was an answer for him to grab. My notes from those early months after Ethan's diagnosis speak volumes about my relentless optimism. In one list, I detailed goals for the next 6 months. Identify 4 parts of the body. Identify 4 items of clothing. Name a friend. On that same day, I apparently felt some need to remind myself of this list. What he can do. Name all the instruments in the orchestra. Identify Mozart. Identify 8 out of the 10 of the greatest guitarists in the 20th century. Any therapist reading this could probably see a mother grasping at straws, trying to prove something to herself and the world. My son will beat this. Someday, when he is a professor of musicology, we will look back on these early days, shake our fist, and laugh. Autism, ha! Now I look back on those early years and wonder if my determination for Ethan to achieve a full recovery might have done us all a disservice. Not that it wasn't important to have hope, but also meant I allowed a perpetual cloud to shadow the small breakthroughs he did have. Yes, Ethan was talking in sentences now, I would tell myself. Yes, he tantrums less at transitions, but always in my mind, there was a but. Why did he still repeat words so much? Why did he still jump and flap his arms? Why did he still look so autistic? The answer I finally learned is simple. This is the way autism works. There are roadblocks in the brain, mysterious and intractable. And for some children, no amount of work or determination is going to change that. I've also learned that at a certain point, fighting autism begins to feel like you're fighting your child. I don't ever look back and wish I had done less when Ethan was younger, but I do wish I understood sooner the battle was not all or nothing. I wish I had learned earlier to see and celebrate the small victories that came instead of holding my breath for the bigger ones. Any parent of a child with special needs will tell you that the greatest joys of this journey happen when you least expect them. Hearing a self-initiated sentence for the first time, looking up to see our 9-year-old has dressed himself or mastered a new skill. As the parent of 2 typical children, I know that it is an entirely different feeling. Your heart stops for a second. My God, you think he can do this? Even now, as Ethan wrestles mightily with all his old issues, he is still capable of surprising us when we least expect it. Recently, after his entrepreneurial younger brother had spent a weekend doing chores to earn money for a toy he wanted, Ethan announced he wanted to do the same thing so he could buy a Bruce Springsteen CD. His dad and I looked at each other. Ethan wants something enough that he's willing to initiate work to get it. One of his refreshing quirks has always been how little he asks us to buy. Our amazement continued over the next 5 days as we watched him vacuum, scrub a bathroom, and carry out trash. At the end of it all, he went to the store and bought his CD. It was a small matter, yes, but it was also a victory on many levels. He watched his younger brother and modeled his idea after him. He made a plan, told us about it, and followed through. It didn't reflect a child who was cured, but it was a far cry from the boy he used to be. That's the message I wish I had taken to heart earlier. I've never known a child who's recovered from autism, but I've also never known one who hasn't gotten better, often by leaps and bounds. To not celebrate that or eternally hope for what your child may never achieve would be a terrible shame. Road trip. Is your pet tagging along on your summer vacation? Follow these tips to keep him happy and healthy in the car. This article is by Jennifer Castoro. The car's all packed. You hop in, start the ignition, crank up the radio, and whoops, suddenly the dog is in your lap or the cat's throwing up in the back seat. Not a good way to kick off your holiday. But taking your pet along with you can be fun, and for many owners, it's essential. According to a 2009 report from the U.S. Travel Association, 18% of adult travelers usually vacation with their pets. In a lot of ways, traveling with them is easy. Rental cottages and campgrounds often accept furry travelers, and many hotels are rolling out the red carpet for them, too. Advanced planning is key to a successful experience. We talked to top experts about how to keep a road trip fun and safe for the 4-legged members of your family. Think it through. As much as you'd love to have your pet join you, consider how well he deals with unfamiliar environments and new, possibly scary situations. Think about whether or not your pet would enjoy or benefit from taking the trip, says Louise Murray, veterinarian and director of medicine of the ASPCA in New York City. It might be kinder to leave him home with a family member or a pet sitter. Check with your vet. If you decide your pet's up for the adventure, make sure his shots are current and ask your vet about how to prevent any illness he could be exposed to. You may also want to ask about using sedatives or anti-nausea medicines to keep him more comfortable on the trip. Your vet can go over the pros and cons. While sedatives, for example, an animal might have become excitable instead of being relaxed, or you might be prone to falling. Scope out animal hospitals in the area where you'll be staying, so you'll be prepared in an emergency. You can go to healthypet.com for a list of locations. Bring proof of your pet's immunizations, copies of his medical history, and your vet's contact information, just in case. Bring proper ID. Outfit your pet with a temporary write-on identification tag that includes phone numbers for friends or family members in case he gets lost and you're unreachable. And consider getting him a microchip. It's a simple, inexpensive procedure, less than $50, that can be done at the vet. Since cats are safest in a breakaway collar, a microchip is essential. Do some prep. Make sure your pet is well socialized so she can cope with any strangers she may meet. And get her used to some of the travel-related experiences she'll have on your family vacation. If the only time your dog rides in the car is when it goes to the vet, it's not going to like it much. Get her in and just sit in the driveway without going anywhere. Put a treat or toy in the car so she'll associate it with good things. Your pet's carrier should be her portable safe haven, so be sure she's comfortable with that. Put the carrier out in your house so it's not only familiar to her, but it's something she likes. It shouldn't be, "Here's the scary box I'm shoving you in," right before you leave. Pack his bags. Bring a traveling kit including food, grooming supplies, a favorite toy, food, and water bowls. There are many new nifty folding ones. Fill a large plastic bottle with water to keep your pet well hydrated. Bring along his bed or blanket to ease the transition. If you have a cat, don't forget a portable litter box. For your dog, bring a leash, a waste scoop, and plenty of disposable bags. Follow road rules. Don't let your dog ride with his head hanging out a car window. Wind or debris could damage his ears and eyes. If your pet isn't a carrier, be sure it's secured with a seatbelt. In an accident, your 3-pound chihuahua could turn into a deadly projectile. The American Automobile Association recommends confining bigger pets to a crate or to the back seat, secured with a pet harness that attaches to the seatbelt. Give your pet a light meal 4 to 6 hours before you set on your trip to avoid motion sickness. And when you pull over for potty breaks, give your dog one too. AAA advises stopping every 2 to 4 hours to let a dog stretch its legs and empty its bladder. Cats should be given the opportunity to use their litter box periodically after a long trip. Above all, don't leave your pet in a parked car when it's warm out. Even with the windows cracked, the temperature inside your vehicle can rise to more than 120 degrees in minutes. Why You Spend More Than You Think, by Charlene Johnson. It happens to all of us. You go to the mall to buy a few paperbacks for your vacation, and somehow you emerge with 3 times what you wanted, a pile of credit card receipts, and no idea of how it happened. How could you do that? Chances are you're unaware of emotional triggers that make you overspend. Fortunately, researchers who study the psychology of shopping are learning more about what does and doesn't give people the urge to splurge. To be a saver, thrifter, shopper, try these newly effortless expert strategies that could have a big impact on your bottom line. Can't afford the expensive bag that's caught your eye? Forget about slinging it over your shoulder just to see how it works. The longer you hold a product, the more likely you'll want to buy it, according to a study from Illinois State University. The author suggests that handling an item, even for a moment, makes you feel it's yours. Pretend you're the lone customer. You may be more likely to choose a pricey brand over a cheaper option if other shoppers are nearby, according to research. Why? It's all about image, which is one of the main reasons people overspend. Few people notice this subtle effect, so be on the alert whenever you're browsing with your buddies or shopping in a crowd. So get rid of temptation. That means halting the never-ending stream of emails and catalogs from your favorite stores. They just intensify your urge to splurge. To stop receiving catalogs, direct mail ads, and store emails, visit dmachoice.org. That's dmachoice.org. You can also opt out of catalogs at catalogchoice.org and unsubscribe from email list individually by following the directions that are typically at the bottom of a message. Calculate the real cost of your purchase. Before you buy that gotta have it outfit, try thinking about the money you'll spend in terms of your time, or what else could it buy? How many hours will you have to work to pay for it? Could that chunk of change cover a car payment or a week's worth of groceries? You may decide the outfit isn't a must-have after all. Unglue yourself from the tube. If you're like the average American, you spend a staggering 153 hours a month watching television. And that could be hazardous to your financial health, because people who watch a lot of TV tend to crave more material possessions. One potential culprit? Many of today's popular shows portray an upscale lifestyle that makes you want to keep up with the Kardashians. Shop sales wisely. Repeat after us. Overspending on discounted stuff still counts as overspending. Yes, it's thrilling to get a $200 designer dress on sale for $50, but be sure to stop and ask yourself if the dress is worth $50 to you, regardless of its original cost. If you don't absolutely love it, it's not worth buying at any price. Keep your financial goals in sight. Clip a beautiful image from a magazine that represents something you really want, such as a beach vacation, a new car, or a remodeled kitchen. Laminate the picture and stash it in your wallet so you'll see it every time you purchase something. It may prevent you from making an impulse buy. Don't be enticed by free trials. How could gratis goods possibly be bad for your bank account? The problem arises when the free trial ends and the company bills you automatically for continued service unless you try to cancel it, something many of us are too lazy to do. Blame it on people's natural tendency to stick with their current situation and services, even when it's in their best interest to make changes. Avoid those offers unless you're confident you will follow through with the cancellation. Next, be prudent with your plastic. As you've probably learned the hard way, charging your purchases to your credit card makes it easier to overspend. Researchers discovered that people are more likely to buy only the basic necessities when they fork over actual dollars. Analyze the extras. When you're in the market for a minivan, a flat-screen TV, or a new stove, how much you spend often depends on the extra features you request. Want a sunroof? Picture-in-perfect capability? A rotisserie oven? First ask yourself, after the newness of the feature wears off, would you still like it and be willing to pay for it? A Yale University study showed that shoppers are less likely to choose high-priced frills if they were asked to predict how their enjoyment of the product would change over time. Don't feel guilty when you splurge. While a twinge of buyer's remorse isn't a bad thing, women who feel ashamed of their spending are likely to spend more. Making an impulse purchase can give you a little rush of excitement, but if you wallow in regret afterwards, you may get the urge to buy something else in order to replace that initial high. To escape this cycle, allow yourself the occasional splurge. Gaining a small sense of satisfaction might help you spend less. Last tip, know your limits. Self-control may not be a bottomless resource. When you use it up by avoiding that tempting box of donuts at work, for instance, or saying no to dessert, you may be more likely to overspend later. In studies conducted at the University of Minnesota, people who were asked to perform tasks that required self-control before the start of a shopping experience were more susceptible to impulse buys and spent more than those who weren't asked to restrain themselves. Consider putting off any shopping trip on days when you feel your willpower waning. So, you can't stop spending? If the recession didn't curb your shopaholism or actually made it worse, you've got plenty of female company. Some women are more inclined to spend during times of crisis than during stable periods, according to a recent survey conducted at the University of Hertfordshire in England. That's because many women turn to retail therapy when they feel sad or anxious. And who feels happy when the unemployment rate is high? Even though 75% of respondents claimed they plan to rein in their spending as a result of the credit crunch, 79% of them said they would still splurge to cheer themselves up. The danger is that for some women, making a lot of these therapeutic purchases can be a sign of compulsive buying habit. Others include preoccupation with shopping and repetitive buying, as well as a lack of impulse control. Compulsive spenders often have a negative self-image, max out their credit cards, and fight with family members about money. If any of this sounds like you, see a therapist who specializes in addictive or compulsive behaviors. Here's some health news. Three cheers. The research is in. Sipping some of your favorite drinks is surprisingly good for you. The wine news. Women who have a drink or two a day are almost 30% less likely to become overweight or obese than those who don't drink at all. Red and white wine have the most benefits, but any alcohol in moderation showed this effect. Beer bonus. Calcium and vitamin D help fight osteoporosis, but silicon, a mineral in beer, has been shown to build bones too. Not all brews are created equal, though, says research. Pale ales have the most silicon, wheat beers the least. Coffee perks. Regular Java drinkers may have a lower risk of stroke, diabetes, and endometrial cancer. 4 cups a day can also cut your risk of abnormal heart rhythms by 18%. Caffeine may block chemicals that can interfere with your heart's electrical signals. Going digital. The next time you make a mammogram appointment, opt for a digital exam. You get a 22% lower dose of radiation than with traditional film, says a new study. Digital is also more accurate at finding tumors in women under 50 and in those with dense breast tissue. Your insurance should cover it, but it's not available everywhere. Serious sinus relief. If you've been suffering for years with chronic sinusitis, stuffy nose, sinus pain, headache, and coughing that won't go away or respond to allergy meds, you may want to talk to your doctor about endoscopic sinus surgery. More than 76% of patients who had this surgery said their symptoms were much better even 1.5 years later. During surgery, which can be done on an outpatient basis, a specialist examines your sinuses through a thin fiber optic tube and does microsurgery to remove the tissues that are blocking them. Here's some more health news about endometriosis. If you often feel pelvic pain or you're having trouble getting pregnant, you could have endometriosis. It happens when the uterine tissues grow in other places, then stays and make chemicals that may irritate nearby tissues and cause pain. While there's no way to diagnose endometriosis non-surgically, birth control pills, which stop ovulation, may relieve symptoms. But here's a surprise. You may be able to prevent endometriosis by eating right. Getting plenty of foods high in omega-3 fatty acids, such as tuna or salmon, can decrease your risk by 22%. While chowing down on foods high in trans fats can increase your chances as much as 48%. Some more health information. A few tips for the summer. If you get stung by a bee, you'll feel better fast. Remove the stinger by scraping a credit card or other straight-edge object along the area. Bees leave a stinger, but yellow jackets, wasps, and hornets don't. It should pop out. If not, use tweezers. Clean the wound with soap and water. Apply aloe vera or baking soda mixed with water to ease the pain. The sooner you remove the stinger and put the ointment on the area, the less it will swell. But if you develop hives or wheezing or your tongue starts to swell, call 911. This could signal a potentially deadly allergic reaction. To prevent it, keep garbage cans sealed, bring pet food bowls indoors, wipe up spills, and don't leave food or drinks uncovered longer than necessary. Yellow jackets and bees are attracted to picnic foods. Here, you might find a tick on yourself, your child, or your dog. Remove the tick as soon as possible. Grasp it near the head with tweezers and pull straight out. Some ticks carry Lyme disease, a bacterial infection that can develop into chronic symptoms if not treated. Lyme is seen throughout the United States, and pets can get it too. Not everyone exposed gets the signature bull's eyes rash. See your doctor to determine if you need antibiotics. How to prevent it? Keep your lawn mowed and weeded and consider spraying in May and September to kill larvae and adult ticks. Have everyone wear tick repellent and pants tucked into their socks while playing or doing yard work. Do head-to-toe tick checks on all members of your family as soon as they come into the house. What happens if your teen chases a frisbee into a patch of poison ivy? Hurry inside and have him wash the skin that was exposed immediately with dish detergent. Yep, dish detergent, which strips the skin of urosol. That's the nasty chemical in the plant that causes the itchy rash and blisters. If he gets a rash, calamine will ease the itchiness and also drive up the blisters. To prevent it, inspect your yard for poison ivy, oak, and sumac. The only way to get rid of these plants is to remove the roots. If you have lots of them, have a landscaper do it. And never burn poison ivy, since the smoke can trigger a severe reaction. What if your child steps on a rusty nail? If the nail breaks the skin, call your pediatrician and make sure your child's tetanus vaccine is up to date. Though relatively rare, if the tetanus bacteria gets into your child's bloodstream, it can be fatal. But a tetanus shot will prevent this if it's got within 24 hours of the injury. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.